The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Welcome back to Friday's Last Word. Nathan Murphy stepping in for Matt Cooper. It's time for the week trending. 087-4100-102 if you want to get involved on WhatsApp. I'm joined by Orla Ryan, news correspondent with thejournal.ie and Today FM's very own Cathal O'Sullivan. We're going to start with the Olympics, and we've been having a good time, and we're going to have a better time tonight at 7 o'clock when Rashida Adeleke wins our 8th medal. But nobody, Orla, has been having a better time at this Olympics than Snoop Dogg.
I mean, I'm still confused as to why he's there, but I'm very, very happy that he's there. He just seems like a very nice man, and everyone's loving the vibes. I mean, we've seen him with like Simone Biles, Coco Gauff. He's taken part in the 200-meter race. He's doing everything. He's been dancing with the gymnasts. He's given pins. There's this, lots of athletes are kind of getting competitive about who gets the most pins. So all the athletes have their own pins, but of course Snoop has his pin. So he did a video where he, you know, gave one to Coco Gauff, and then, you know, she responded. So there's all this back and forth between different American athletes and athletes from other countries as well. And there was also a great photo of himself and Martha Stewart, who are sort of unlikely friends and have been for years.
Well, that's a lot of speculation about the relationship between Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg.
I mean, look, I won't possibly comment on that, but I did very much enjoy him kind of in full, like, equestrian gear, watching the dressage. Yeah, brilliant.
I think he's just, I don't know, unlikely ambassador, and he's NBC's special correspondent kind of over there at the moment. But, like, I think people have jumped on this Snoop Dogg bandwagon from the minute he was, like, running with the torch, and we're just running with it at this stage.
I can see maybe why people might be a little bit annoyed that he gets to run with the torch and be a special correspondent, because to the best of my knowledge, he doesn't, you know, have that much experience in terms of broadcast journalism or journalism or sport. But why not? Why not, Snoop?
Yeah, look, it's the Olympics. It only happens every 4 years.
So it's coming to all of us sports journalists. One of the lads from Kneecap is going to be coming the next World Cup for off the ball or something like that. Lots of people say it would be an improvement. It will be an improvement. It's interesting, though, the difference in how NBC cover the Olympics from most of the coverage we see with RTE and the BBC. It's much more based on the entertainment side of it, where they have Snoop Dogg, Scarlett Johansson's husband, who's on Saturday Night Live, is covering, is their correspondent covering the surfing. That whereas we don't really indulge too much in the entertainment side of sport. We want our hardcore sports analysis.
More sense. And in fairness, I don't think I've ever engaged with NBC Sport before, but I have definitely watched and shared Snoop Dogg clips over the past 2 weeks.
Our coverage of it, I think, has been like second to none as well. Like, we get to see like the Irish athletes, but also covering sports that, like, I suppose we wouldn't be exposed to all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, even you looked at the likes of something like the pole vault with Mondo Duplantis, like, the whole world was watching the other night when he broke the world record, and even the whole stadium stayed behind to watch him break the world record, which was just, I suppose, testament to, like, the whole aspect of the Olympics and, like, I suppose, sport bringing everyone together.
Well, it is one of the most enjoyable parts of the Olympics, that you can become an expert in the pole vault in the space of half an hour, and you can judge by the run-up exactly whether they're going to be successful or not. That was one of the moments of the Games from a non-Irish point of view. And the fact that he delivered it, and reading some of his interviews and just how big a superstar he is back in his native Sweden, and the fact that he's trying to just upgrade the world record 1 centimetre at a time so he gets his bonus 1 centimetre.
Which is incredible. Yeah, he gets about 30 grand every time he breaks it.
Upwards of 30.
Sorry, it's between 30 and 100 grand. You're right. 30 is the minimum he'll get.
I don't know if you saw him, but he did a little interview with Swedish television the next morning after breaking the world record, where he looked a bit doe-eyed.
Well, he definitely hadn't been to bed.
Yeah,
and he had a very good
fair
one.
Enough, yeah.
But, like, after breaking a world record, you're going to at least have a little bit of a celebration.
He didn't have the professionalism of Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan, who just quietly slipped out of Paris onto their flight home, probably expecting thousands of people when they arrived at Dublin Airport. And nobody there.
Well, further cementing that they're very, like, salt of the earth, normal guys. They were just on the flight home, a regular flight, and they bumped into a guy from Limerick, and they got chatting, and they mentioned in passing, oh, well, we're going to get the air coach from Dublin to Cork if it's not already booked out when we get there. So then this guy, Kieran Duggan, was like, well, I'm driving in that direction. Obviously, I'll just bring you home. And they're like, no, it's fine. And they had a bit of a back and forth, and they said, actually, you know what? A lift would be great. So he waited for them to pick up their bags and baggage. I presume they had the medals as hand luggage, but he waited for them to get the rest of their gear. And then, yeah, he drove them home. But they were about to get the air coach back to Cork, which seems very, like, muted. And I know, I'm sure there will be a big celebration. There's a big celebration in Dublin next week for everybody. And I'm sure there will be more celebrations in Cork. But it is probably a bit anticlimactic to win at the Olympics and then come back and be
there
like,
I guess I'll get the air coach. Being like, where were their parents, like, to collect them? Like, why were they getting the air coach in the first place? And Natalie Long, the other Irish rower, jumped in the car as well, which is just so typically Irish that you have this, like, car full of suitcases, which are huge as well. Like, you saw them coming through the airport pushing them. But yeah, like, obviously the lads came home. They have the World Championships later on this month. So, like, they're waiting to celebrate that little bit later on in the month. But this is just the epitome of what Ireland are doing at the Olympics, like, just coming together and, like, Kieran Duggan, more power to him.
We now have so many medals. We don't even need to acknowledge the people when they return.
They're like, oh, they had them too early in the games, which has been so many since.
It is kind very like, keeping with their personality.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if nobody even knew they were leaving Paris, never mind that they were going to be arriving into Dublin airport to
just
no
to
fanfare
focus
at
again,
all.
As you say, to focus on the next thing and be like, right, well, we want to win more, so we're going to go back and start training again.
How good for Kieran Duggan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What a fun car journey. I want to be a fly on
the
wall.
How long is it to Skibbereen? About 4 hours probably from Dublin Airport.
Probably, yeah.
I think it's going to be taking 7 hours on the bus.
Did they give him a few quid for petrol? Or?
Oh, sure. Well, like, you start selling off, like, shares in the medal or something like that. You own half of this.
Bright and early this morning, Daniel Whiffen was in the men's marathon 10K race. And as you watch the various events, you wonder, could I do that? The 10K race, an hour and 50 minutes in the river. No thanks.
Yeah, like, I would consider myself strong enough as a swimmer. Like, I can do a good few lengths and stuff like that. Like,
you're one step off in an Olympian, yeah?
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, when it comes to Olympics, I'm like, sometimes you look at things and, like, I could definitely do that. But the swimmer, like, you even saw him coming out of the water and he looked shattered. He was drinking a bottle of Coke, like, straight from the glass and, like, just necking it. Because I'm sure there was an awful taste in his mouth, number one. But he did say he was never doing it again.
He said it was the best and worst thing that he's ever done. He said he was punched in the face. I think he was kicked in the stomach and that he strained his groin as well. So he kind of said it wasn't pleasant from basically the first minute I got in there. Obviously, they're very close together at the start. So elbows, legs, everything's flying. So he said he was very glad he did it, but he will never, ever do it again.
Yeah, I did wonder halfway through the race when it looked like he wasn't going to win a medal, whether he thought, actually, why don't I just leave this?
I wonder what point do you think, oh, fuck this, like, I have my medal. Why am I in a dirty river? And
I'm out of here. Like,
for 2 hours. Like, fair enough, doing a 10K road race, grand.
And I thought watching the other ones, they were quite long, like, you know, they're like 9 minutes or 14 minutes. And, like, obviously he did fantastically well, two medals, like, it's a fantastic achievement to come out with. But when I heard he was doing the 10K, I was like, oh, Jesus, like, it's a long slog.
Didn't they cancel the, whatever, the practice run the other day because the river was so dirty? I was like, I don't think the river was cleaner.
They spent €1 billion trying to clean it up. So
exactly. Hopefully they don't all get sick now after that. It doesn't seem like it's a very pleasant river to swim in.
COVID has become a bit of a story again throughout these Olympics. We saw it at the start with the swimmer Adam Peaty. Noah Lyles last night, so he won the 100 metres and finished with a bronze in the men's 200 metre final, and then straight away afterwards seen in real distress, wheeled off
literally
about 2 minutes after he just run out. The real showman. Reading today that Leona Maguire says she's been sick with the flu all week. It did raise the question as to whether Noah Lyles should have been there that close with all his fellow competitors.
I did look it up because I was kind of like, that's strange, because he was, I think he tested positive on Tuesday and obviously he ran for a couple of days after that and then was wheeled off, I think, on Thursday. But then I was like, God, you know, did he break the rules? I Googled it earlier and they were like, no, he didn't break the rules. It's actually, they said, COVID is now treated as like any other respiratory illness. You kind of take yourself away, wear a mask when you can, but you can still compete if you feel well enough to do so, which is possibly questionable, but I understand, like, I suppose if you've trained for 4 years, you don't want to let COVID stand in the way. But then when you're so close to other athletes, and he was hugging them afterwards and stuff, there is a question as to whether or not, you know, he could have passed it.
It was, I suppose, if he was like competing, if other athletes were competing again, probably, but I suppose he probably was in a certain amount of isolation coming up to the race. But it was the whole arrogance of running out, jumping in the air like this thing before the 100 metres. You kind of have to be like, oh geez, is he a bit of a dose? Like,
he has a bit of a dose anyway, whether or not
he is a bit of a dose. But wheeling off, and then the Botswana, his name escapes me now, the lad who won the 200 metre last night, spoke afterwards saying, oh, you weren't all up about it. And he was like, well, I'm not Noah Lyles, I don't have the arrogance of him. So it's just kind of fitting, I think, a little bit.
Are you going to be on O'Connell Street at 12:30 on Monday for the homecoming?
I mean, if works, let's maybe.
I mean, I'm off work, so I might be there.
It's identical to cover it maybe, but yeah, I imagine many, many thousands of people will be.
Yeah, I really hope so, because look, there is, with the Olympics, always an element of bandwagon jumping, and we all get so into it, and we all
there.
Talk about what should come afterwards.
It is nice, though. I was walking into town this afternoon, and all the Irish flags are up already, and the Irish athletics flags and stuff like that, so it is
and
nice.
Even in Port Kimbrough, you see the boxes and the bins all being painted gold.
Yeah,
it's
that's
just, nice. Olympic fever is really hitting Dublin.
Yeah, certainly in Tallaght tonight, 7 o'clock start for Rashida Adeleke in her 800 metre final. So that's all the really good stuff that's been happening. There's a lot of not so good stuff as well. We might take a quick break and we'll come back to that in the week trending in just a moment. Hey, welcome back to the week trending. I'm joined by Orla Ryan, news correspondent with thejournal.ie and Today FM's Cathal O'Sullivan. And the UK riots, Orla, have obviously been a massive story over the last few weeks. I think a lot of people in this country have looked at how the police force in the UK have handled it compared to how the Gardaí have handled protests, and how quickly they were able to identify the aggressors, how quickly they were able to get them in front of a court, and how quickly they were able to get them locked up.
Yeah, there's been around 500 arrests to date, which has been very swift. 150 people have been charged and a good few people have been sent to prison, kind of sentences ranging from 11 to 32 months. So, you know, it's not kind of even 3 or 4 months, 6 months. Some people are getting nearly 3 years in prison. So I nearly thought I misheard it the other day on the radio when I heard a couple of people had already been jailed, because it's just literally been so fast. I suppose, you know, they obviously want to send a very strong message that this is not okay, and it shows that the justice system can work very quickly when it needs to. But yeah, I suppose a lot of Irish people are wondering, while, you know, thankfully the protests here haven't been in general as violent, some of them obviously have, and we saw what happened last November, but the process for justice has been much slower here in that regard. So people are kind of wondering, you know, why can't we do that here? But obviously the UK is trying to send a very strong message that this kind of behaviour and criminality is not all right.
Yeah, and even looking to, I suppose, on this island, Belfast, Michelle O'Neill, the First Minister, has condemned, I suppose, there was no place for racism in Northern Ireland, and it's like pure racism and hatred. Like, I suppose when you look at this island, like Orla's mentioned last November, the likes of the Coolock riots last week, I suppose it's not representative of everyone on this island, and I suppose that's the message throughout the UK and throughout Belfast as well, that I suppose these people who are, I suppose, coming to our country deserve a lot better. And we, as, I suppose, people in this country, aren't representative of this message. Like, I think it was violent disorder were some of the arrests made for, 69 counts of that, 12 possessions of people having weapons. Some were racially aggravated, and 5 people were charged with offences involving social media and other online activity. And it's all from, I suppose, stemming from misinformation online. And a lot of people, like, where this stemmed from was the 3 children being killed last week in Southport. And, like, I think 20 places have had protests across the UK. But like that, the misinformation surrounding who carried out this attack was where it stemmed from.
And it looks as though there's going to be significant protests and counter-protests in Belfast over the weekend as well. The level of misinformation online, and particularly on X, on Twitter, seems to have gone to a whole other level over the last few weeks. And it's only actually when you talk to people who aren't on X and who aren't consuming it every day, and their lack of knowledge as to what's being said. And even over this week, Elon Musk consistently sharing fake articles. We see the one with Keir Starmer about considering sending far-right rioters to emergency detainment camps in the Falklands. Now, he deleted it after about 30 minutes, but not before it was seen, because it's Elon Musk and he owns the company. And if you log on and it's in the For You section,
in your feed, whether you
literally cannot ignore it. When the owner of the company is getting away with tweeting that sort of misinformation.
And not correcting himself. He took it down, yeah, but 2 million people had already seen it. It had been shared loads of times. People were screen-grabbing it and still sharing it. So he's done this several times before. He'll tweet out a piece of misinformation. At least this was only for 30 minutes. Sometimes he's left stuff up for days. He may or may not eventually take it down, but at that stage millions of people have seen it, and he very often doesn't correct himself. So this was like a doctored Telegraph article. So it did, you know, I think most people would look at the headline and say that doesn't seem right, and maybe click into it and see who had written it, or was it actually true. But he had shared it, and the Telegraph came out and said, we've never written this, it's completely doctored, it's not real. It was the co-leader of Britain First, Ashley Simon, she shared it first, saying we're all being deported to the Falklands, and that's how Musk saw it, seemingly, and then he shared it. But yeah, it was completely debunked within minutes, and he did take it down, but as we said, not after millions of people had already seen it, and still some people are sharing it as if it's true.
Yeah, and he had been embroiled kind of like in this row with Keir Starmer. He's kind of saying like the police like response has been one-sided and saying that civil war is inevitable. Like, it's just beyond me that this man is running this huge company.
Simon Harris, when asked about Elon Musk, said he didn't want to massage the ego of any social media entrepreneur. He said he had no problem meeting Elon Musk and other social media executives about content on their platform. Should he be meeting Elon Musk if the opportunity presented itself?
I'm not sure about Elon Musk himself, perhaps some of the X or Twitter executives in Dublin, but I suppose why not have a chat with him if the opportunity presents itself? I don't think he is the most reasonable man in the world, so I'm not sure how far you'd get to him. I mean, Simon Harris has come out and said, you know, we need stricter controls. There's a code of ethics being developed, and he's saying that, you know, companies like Meta or X who don't follow these rules in the coming months, that they'll be hit where it hurts, i.e. there'll be large fines. And obviously we've seen recently, you know, there's been a lot of threats to Simon Harris and to his family, and there was a post on Instagram that was left up for 2 days threatening him, and was eventually taken down. But you'd wonder how, if, you know, the leader of the country flies, actually there's a threatening post about me, how that takes 48 hours to be taken down. It's
yeah,
very...
and like, he, Simon Harris is pretty straight talking, pretty sound kind of guy. Like, he says it as it is, but also like when he says massage the ego, I feel like him sitting down with Elon Musk might, like, it might just look really, really bad for Elon Musk. Like, he might just come out of it looking worse. And Simon Harris, like, that mightn't want to, I suppose, put his family more at risk if people on the far right do see him meeting with Elon Musk or calling him out for certain things. He might put his family at more risk of this.
I don't think anyone who's received abuse online is surprised by that response from Meta around Instagram. When you look at some of the racist abuse that sports people are getting on X, and when they report it, they're told it's not a problem with their guidelines.
I don't engage with X that much anymore. I still have it for work, but in the past when I have flagged things or reported things, there could be, you know, there could be threats in it, there could be something really vile, racist, transphobic, homophobic, and more often than not when you flag it, it just comes back and says, no, this doesn't breach any standards or any community standards. And you're like, well, what are the community standards if this is okay? And, you know, if someone like Simon Harris, the leader of the country, can't get a post taken down, I know that was Instagram, that wasn't X, that was, so that was Meta, you know, what hope does anybody else who's flagging stuff saying, you know, I want this taken down, if the leader of the country, it takes them 2 days to take it down, they're probably not going to do it for, you know, your average Joe Soap.
I feel like every time I'm on this slot, a new Banksy artwork has been stolen. This time, the fourth new Banksy artwork stolen in London hours after it appeared. This is basically his main way of getting publicity. He puts it places someone will nick it.
I kind of love it. Like, I absolutely, like, anytime I've seen Banksy artworks come up in the past, like, I think it's just really, really cool and really exciting. But yes, this kind of, the latest animal-themed artwork has been stolen. It's a wolf, a stencil of a wolf howling towards the sky, and it was painted on what appears to be like your average sky satellite dish outside your house, but it was on Rye Lane in Peckham and it was seen to be stolen. It's part of a new collection of his works which cropped up last or during the week. I don't know if you saw the kind of ghost themed one that the Book Fair in Killorglin had kind of taken on to be like, oh, even Banksy's supporting the Book Fair, which is just so gas and so typically Irish again. They were like, even Banksy's in the mood. But like, I think it's good, any publicity is good publicity when it comes to, like, I don't know if you remember in 2018 when he shredded his own work.
Great,
it went for 1 million and then it just automatically started to just shred itself. Yeah, like, who is Banksy? I suppose we kind of will never know in a way. I think Robert Del Naha, who's the front man to Massive Attack, had been rumoured in the past and he denied it and said, no, it's not me, but I know who it is. And one of his close friends is Neil Buchanan, formerly of Art Attack.
I have heard this rumour and so,
would just be so cool if Art Attack from man Neil Buchanan was Banksy.
I don't think it's true. He has denied it, but he would deny it, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would.
Of course, he's not going to admit to it. Am I alone in having assumed that the portal was no longer there? It is actually there. We're 100 days in.
Yeah, we're
are people still mooning and doing all these things?
I forgot it was still there. I was sent down back in May, one of the first days it was open, and spent a few hours there. It was actually very lovely and wholesome. It was kind of a life-affirming experience, seeing people connect with each other, and obviously there were people messing around as well. But it was kind of, that was the week where it was turned off for a few days because people were mooning each other, flashing each other, and, you know, people in Dublin held up pictures of the Twin Towers and stuff like that. And then an OnlyFans model on the new York side, she flashed it and there was all this stuff happening. So basically after that, they were saying, well, we can't leave it on 24/7 because you can't be trusted, basically. So
Cahill's banned from being within 100 feet of it.
Yeah, he can't go there anymore. He's not legally allowed to speak about the portal.
I was only there last week and it was just so bizarre. We were all standing outside the portal and there was nobody on the other side. Yeah. So it was around 1 o'clock Dublin time, 8 a.m. New York, and there was nobody there. It was so anticlimactic. But yeah,
now it's open from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. basically to try and not get people in the middle of the night who maybe have had a few beverages. And there's also, if someone has the job, they're called ambassadors, but it's just a person who stands there, and if someone starts to moan or do something inappropriate, they can turn the portal off via an app.
Yeah, they can
phone.
Blur the image or something like that. It's just, I don't know, I kind of had forgotten a little bit it was there until last week. But yeah, we're connected with more cities now, I believe, other than just New York. But I don't know if people are still like, wow. It's not.
I think the novelty has worn off. It's still a nice idea.
There's a Guinness World Record attempt at the Wexford Fla. What's happening?
So at the Wexford Fla during the week, a Guinness World Record attempt was broken. Some 2,516 musicians were involved in an attempt to play the most tin whistles played simultaneously, which to me sounds like hell on earth.
Were they all musicians? So they could all play. So it wasn't just randomers turning up out of tune.
Well, I assume you'd assume at the flat anyone can play the tin whistle.
They've been practicing, I think, for a few weeks. So some people were, you know, I'm sure skilled musicians, and then other people have been practicing for a few weeks to get ready. So there was probably a mixed ability level, let's say.
Once upon a time when I was in school, we went on an immersion program to Zambia and I had to teach 60 Zambian kids how to play the tin whistle. So it just brought me back there and it was
you
like...
could have been down at the Wexford Flat. Your expertise could have been valuable.
I think I can do hot cross buns. That's about it.
In fairness to them though, the previous attempt or the previous record was 1,015 players and this was 2,516. So they more than doubled it.
Yeah, and there's actually this week at Electric Picnic, they're attempting another Guinness World Record for the most people doing Rock the Boat, so you can catch me there. I love Rock the Boat.
The tin whistle you can put up with, like, there's no worse experience in a parent's life than when your 8-year-old arrives in the door with a tin whistle or a recorder. And you know your life is going to be hell for the next.
Especially, I think tin whistles have to be in tune to a certain amount. Like, you can't just buy them. Well, you can buy them in tune, but they go out of tune or lose their kind of touch. And so, especially as over time they start to lose touch and they're still playing it, you're like, oh my God, please give it up. You can't play it.
Just before we finish up, story this week, huge story about the cancelled Taylor Swift concerts. And we heard in the news there that there's been another arrest around this. It's obviously, Orla, just such a serious situation and one that's going to have probably a big impact on everybody that goes to major events, that goes to concerts because of the security response to something like this.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, obviously, Taylor Swift is in the middle of her record-breaking Eras tour. Millions of people all over the world, including many, many Irish people a few weeks back, going to see her. So, I mean, obviously, it's fantastic that authorities in Austria figured out what was going on and they cancelled gigs before, you know, a horrendous attack could have taken place. But 195,000 people were due to attend across the three nights. One of the most worrying things I think about it is, you know, the people who were arrested, they're ranging in age from 17 to 19. They're very young men. In one case, technically a child, a teenager, but a child. So it's just incredibly worrying that, you know, a lot of these people are becoming radicalized online and they are targeting these mass events where tens of thousands of people or hundreds of thousands of people are going to be at. And it's just absolutely frightening and terrifying. I mean, if we think back to their Ariana Grande concert in Manchester a few years back, the horrendous attack there. So obviously it's not new for someone to target a concert like this, particularly a concert that will be full of young people and young women. It's terrifying. So, you know, thank God they caught it in time and it didn't happen. But it does beg the question, you know, if and when Taylor Swift come back to play again, will somebody else try and do something else? Or it doesn't have to be Taylor Swift. Obviously, it could be another concert next week. So it's really scary.
And there are these, I suppose, a number of people that are still in Austria. They have this weekend booked for Taylor Swift. There's a number of Irish people over there as well.
They're going to gather and they're going to sing their songs regardless.
They are doing that. And I suppose it's in a way, like, not a silver lining. I wouldn't call it that. But they're all gathering in kind of this moment of empowerment and wholesomeness to be like, look, we're all standing together. And I suppose, thank God, this was a thing that weren't put in the face of danger. We don't actually like mind now that it's cancelled because there was a huge threat to life. But they are coming together as fans and making this moment to be like, we are still here. You're not going to stop us, really.
Cahill O'Sullivan, Orla Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Trending.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.